The following audiobooks contain AI-generated content and may contain errors. This audiobook narration presents Manager as Coach, Practical Frameworks and Scripts for Building Capability in Hybrid Teams, Topic Introduction. It is 9:13 a.m. on a Tuesday in 2025, and a manager is staring at a project dashboard. A single status indicator, a small circle that was green yesterday, is now red. The project is global, the team is hybrid, and the person responsible for that red dot is three time zones away, connected only by a screen and a keyboard. The old reflex is to intervene directly, to send a sharp message demanding an update, to schedule an urgent call, to solve the problem by telling the person exactly what to do. The impulse feels efficient, decisive, and familiar. It is also, very likely, wrong. That moment of hesitation between the old reflex of command and the new discipline of development is where modern leadership is being redefined. For decades, the manager's role was built on a simple premise. Authority flows from proximity and expertise. A leader saw the work, knew the answers, and directed the action. But that premise is fracturing. When teams are scattered across home offices and continents, proximity is lost. When technology and market conditions change in months, not years, a manager's existing expertise becomes a starting point, not a final answer. The command and control style, born in an era of industrial predictability, now struggles in an environment of constant digital change. This creates the central tension for today's leaders. The pressure for speed has never been higher, yet the traditional methods for achieving it are becoming less effective. Handing down answers creates dependency, not capability. Directing every move erodes ownership and engagement, especially among a generation wary of management that looks more like surveillance than support. The core question is no longer just how to get the work done. It is how to build a team that can get the work done tomorrow, when the problems are different and the manager is not in the room. The answer lies in a profound shift in stance, from manager as director to manager as coach. This is not a call for softer leadership. It is a demand for a more precise and powerful kind of leadership. Coaching in this context is not therapy, which addresses mental health, nor is it mentoring, which transfers experience. It is the disciplined craft of improving another person's ability to think for themselves, to define goals, see reality clearly, generate options, and commit to a path forward. It is a specific mode of conversation, built on learnable frameworks and guided by a clear understanding of human psychology. It is the operating system for developing talent in a world that refuses to stand still. This audiobook is a guide to that craft. It provides the architecture for conversations that build capability, not just complete tasks. We will explore the models developed by pioneers like Sir John Whitmore and others, translating theory into the practical scripts and habits that work under pressure. We will navigate the delicate balance of asking versus telling and discover how to give feedback that fuels growth instead of fear. This is an invitation to see leadership not as a fixed personality trait, but as a skill that can be practiced, refined, and mastered. It begins by understanding that the manager's most valuable contribution is no longer found in having all the answers, but in the ability to help others find their own. End of introduction. In 2025, the word coach sits near the center of organizational life, not at its edge. In recent global surveys published by the International Coaching Federation, or ICF, the Federation describes a field with hundreds of thousands of practitioners worldwide and a market measured in the billions of US dollars. The exact estimates vary by method, but the direction is consistent. Coaching is no longer a niche service. It is a response to a wider truth about modern work. Conditions change faster, than old leadership reflexes can keep up. The manager's coach paradigm responds to that speed. Hybrid schedules stretch teams across time zones and home offices. Projects absorb tools that did not exist a year ago, and job scopes shift faster than formal training can follow. In that context, a manager cannot rely on proximity, repetition, and authority to shape performance. Command and control assumes the manager sees enough to correct quickly and often. Hybrid work unsettles that assumption, and rapid technological change unsettles it again. Coaching, done well, becomes a method for aligning work without hovering and for building capability without waiting for a yearly review. A quieter pressure runs underneath those operational shifts. In Workplace Commentary in 2024 and 2025, the idea of conscious unbossing captures a real pattern. Many younger employees hesitate to step into management roles that look like constant pressure with little support. The phrase is provocative, but the underlying issue is plain. When management is framed as surveillance, conflict, and endless meetings, it becomes unattractive to the very people organizations hope will become the next generation of leaders. A manager as coach approach offers a different deal. It treats management as a craft, learnable and improvable, rather than as a personality type that someone either has or does not. This shift does not require managers to become softer. It requires them to become more precise. Command and control can feel efficient because it moves quickly from problem to instruction, yet speed is not the same as progress. When people are handed answers too early, an organization may gain a short-term fix and a long-term dependency. Coaching interrupts that pattern by holding a simple line. The goal is not only to solve the task, but to build the person's ability to solve the next one. Coaching also clarifies what leadership is for in an era of artificial intelligence. As more work is automated, assisted, or accelerated, the scarce advantage shifts toward judgment, learning, and coordination under uncertainty. A manager who can create clarity, surface reality, and help someone choose a path forward becomes more valuable, not less. The coaching stance is how that value shows up in daily interactions, not as a motivational speech, but as a disciplined mode of conversation that produces clearer thinking and better follow-through. Before any tools or models, coaching needs boundaries. It is not mentoring, not managing, and not therapy, even though it can borrow useful behaviors from each. Managing is role-based accountability. It includes assigning work, setting standards, monitoring risk, and making decisions when the organization requires a call. Managing also includes consequences. That does not make it harsh. It makes it real. Teams need someone to decide, to prioritize, and to protect safety and compliance. Coaching does not replace management. It sits inside it, as a method for developing performance rather than merely directing it. Mentoring is guidance from experience. A mentor brings pattern recognition, context, and sometimes sponsorship. Mentoring often includes advice because the aim is to shorten the learner's path by sharing what the mentor already knows. Coaching can include expertise, but it is not primarily about transferring a playbook. It is about improving the other person's ability to define goals, interpret reality, generate options, and commit to action. Therapy is treatment for mental health conditions and psychological distress, typically within a regulated clinical relationship. Coaching may touch emotions, because work is emotional and change is emotional, but coaching is not a clinical service. When a workplace conversation reveals serious mental health concerns, self-harm risk, or trauma beyond workplace development, a manager's coaching posture gives way to appropriate organizational pathways, such as employee assistance resources or clinical care. The boundary protects everyone. the employee, the manager, and the integrity of coaching itself. Those distinctions matter more in 2025 because coaching is scaling. Broad demand encourages tools, platforms, and shortcuts. Some are helpful, others blur lines that should stay clear. A manager's coach approach works best when it stays ethically simple. It focuses on role performance, growth, and relationships at work, and it stays in its lane. Artificial intelligence, used properly, can make that lane easier to drive. Across program descriptions and product categories in 2025, AI in coaching commonly shows up in three forms: assessment, nudges, and measurement. Assessments use structured prompts and data inputs to highlight patterns, such as how someone communicates under pressure, what stresses tend to appear, or where blind spots may sit. Nudges are timely reminders tied to context, designed to encourage practice in the flow of work. Measurement tools track activity and progress over time, so development does not depend on vague impressions. The promise is scale. A manager cannot be everywhere, especially when much collaboration happens in writing and across dispersed systems. Yet many evaluations and program reports also point to a practical limit. Technology-only tools often fall short of blended approaches that combine AI capability with human relationship building. The reason is not mystical. Trust changes what people are willing to admit, what risks they will take, and how honestly they will face reality. Algorithms can prompt reflection, but they do not reliably create psychological safety. Humans do. A blended approach also keeps the manager honest about what AI can and cannot do. Some systems claim to analyze performance signals from multiple sources and generate real-time feedback. In some regulated settings, tools may even draw on sensitive inputs, including biometric data, when consent and rules allow it. A manager as coach stance treats those tools as aids, not authorities. Data can help identify patterns, but coaching still requires interpretation, context, and care. The manager's job is to ensure any insight becomes a conversation, not a verdict. If coaching is a method, emotional intelligence is its engine. Emotional intelligence, often shortened to EI, refers to skills such as self-awareness, emotional regulation, empathy, and social effectiveness. It is easy to treat EI as a soft add-on. The research record points in a different direction. In a 2024 peer-reviewed study published in the Journal of Applied Behavioral Science, emotional and social intelligence competencies were found to predict client behavior change in coaching relationships, while general mental ability mattered less than many organizations assume. That detail changes what a manager should practice. The study links behavior change to competencies such as achievement orientation, adaptability, emotional self-control, empathy, organizational assessment, and influence. The list is practical. It suggests coaching effectiveness is not primarily about cleverness. It is about the capacity to stay regulated, read the room accurately, and help another person choose a better behavior in a real environment with real constraints. This also helps explain why coaching can feel difficult for high-performing technical managers. In many careers, success comes from solving hard problems quickly. Coaching asks for a different kind of strength: resisting the urge to solve too early, and instead helping someone else do the thinking. EI is what makes that pause possible. Without it, coaching can become a performance of questions that still carries judgment underneath, and people tend to sense that quickly. The coaching stance sits on a spectrum from directive to non-directive. Directive means telling, instructing, or prescribing. Non-directive means asking, listening, reflecting, and helping someone reach their own conclusions. Real leadership requires both. The mistake is not being directive. The mistake is being directive by default. An ask, not tell default is a useful discipline because it creates space for the other person's thinking and it signals respect. Still, coaching is not an excuse for ambiguity when stakes are high. Safety, compliance, and ethical risk provide a clear rule for switching back to directive management. If a behavior could harm a customer, violate policy, breach a regulation, or create an unsafe environment, the manager's role is to be explicit. Coaching can return after risk is contained to address how the situation happened and what capability needs to improve. A simple microscript can establish the stance without theatrics. A manager can ask permission to coach rather than imposing it, with language such as, "Would it be helpful to talk this through in a coaching mode? Or is direct instruction more useful right now?" The sentence does three things at once. It makes the relationship collaborative. It clarifies that coaching is a mode, not a personality. And it gives the employee a clean way to ask for clarity when ambiguity would be costly. That permission-seeking style works only if psychological safety exists. Psychological safety is the felt sense that candor will not be punished, and that questions, mistakes, and dissent can be voiced without humiliation or retaliation. Teams without psychological safety tend to hide problems until they become outages. Teams with it surface reality early, when the cost to fix is low. Coaching depends on those early signals. Psychological safety is not created by slogans. It is built through repeated interactions that prove two things. The manager listens and the manager responds fairly. Coaching can accelerate both. When a manager makes it normal to ask questions before judging, people learn that honesty is safe. When a manager gives feedback based on observable behavior rather than personal attack, people learn that growth is possible. In 2025, the competency language around coaching reflects that relational foundation. In its 2025 update, the ICF organizes its core competencies into four domains: foundation, co-creating the relationship, communicating effectively, and cultivating learning and growth. The labels matter less than the signal. Trust, listening, and facilitating growth are not optional extras. They are central to the work. Those competencies point toward a crucial managerial move: contracting the conversation. Contracting is not legal paperwork. It is defining what the conversation is for, what each person's role is, how long it will take, and what success looks like. Managers often skip this and then wonder why coaching conversations drift into venting, debate, or vague encouragement. A contract can be spoken in less than 30 seconds. It can sound like this: the aim is to leave the conversation with a clear next step for the next 2 weeks. 10 minutes is allocated to surface the facts, 10 minutes to explore options, and 5 minutes to choose a plan. The manager's role is to ask and support, and the employee's role is to think out loud and commit. The structure matters because time is real. It also matters because it reduces anxiety created by unclear expectations. Contracting becomes even more valuable in hybrid work. When informal alignment is lower, with fewer hallway clarifications and fewer quick visual cues, written agreements and explicit goal definitions help prevent silent divergence. A manager as coach approach treats written clarity as an act of care, not bureaucracy. It reduces rework, protects trust, and creates a shared reference when memory turns selective. A quick practice exercise begins building that habit. A manager can audit the last week of interactions and label each meaningful moment as telling, advising, or asking. Telling is direct instruction. Advising is suggesting based on experience. Asking is prompting the other person to reason, decide, or reflect. The point is not to eliminate telling. The point is to see the yield. Many managers discover the ratio is not what they believed, especially under stress. Once coaching becomes a stance, it needs conversation architecture. Good intentions produce inconsistent results without structure. Many managers rely on chat as a default format, a loose exchange of updates and opinions. Chat can feel friendly, but it often fails at development because it lacks sequence. Coaching works best when it moves through stages that match how people change. Define an outcome, surface reality, generate options, commit to action, and review. The most widely used architecture is the GROW model. Goal, reality, options, and way forward. It was developed in the 1980s by business coaches, including Graham Alexander and Alan Fine, and later popularized by Sir John Whitmore. Its staying power comes from its simplicity. The model creates momentum without forcing a manager into a rigid script. The goal phase clarifies what success looks like. Many workplace problems persist because the goal is fuzzy. Coaching tightens it by making it observable and time-bound. One common aid is the SMART criteria, meaning specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, and time-bound. The manager as coach does not need to recite the acronym. The manager needs to ensure the goal can be observed in the world, not merely felt inside. The reality phase is where coaching earns its reputation. Reality is not a mood. It is facts, constraints, and context. This phase slows the conversation to prevent solutions built on guesses. It asks what is happening now, what evidence exists, what has already been tried, and what constraints cannot be ignored, including time, budget, dependencies, policy, and capability. In hybrid organizations, reality often includes written artifacts, such as a project plan, a customer message, a performance metric, or a definition of done. Coaching draws those artifacts into the room. A manager who skips reality tends to reward the most confident storyteller. A manager who stays with reality makes space for the person who thinks carefully, notices constraints, and needs a moment to name what is actually true. That is not only fairness, it is performance. Solutions built on inaccurate reality fail, and failure costs more than patience. The options phase expands the field. Under pressure, people collapse to one option, usually the most familiar one. Coaching challenges that narrowing. The manager's questions aim for breadth without fantasy. Options can include doing less, sequencing differently, asking for help earlier, clarifying stakeholders, renegotiating scope, or changing a habit that reliably creates friction. The coach does not need to prefer any option yet. The coach needs the person to see that choice exists. Way forward turns possibility into commitment. It defines the next step, the timeline, and the check-in. It also surfaces obstacles early. A useful discipline is to ask what might get in the way and what support is needed. That makes the plan more robust, and it gives the manager something concrete to provide, such as removing a blocker, allocating a resource, or making a decision. GROW is especially suitable when performance issues are time-bound and observable, and when the employee can influence the outcome. It is less suitable when the situation is primarily systemic, such as an unclear strategy, conflicting incentives, or structural overload. In those cases, coaching can still help, but the manager often needs to shift from coaching an individual to redesigning the work. Alternative frameworks exist for specific contexts. OSCAR is often used when someone feels stuck and needs solution-focused progress. It typically moves through outcome, scaling, know-how, affirm and action, and review. Its value is an emphasis on what is working and how to amplify it, rather than diagnosing the entire problem. In fast-moving teams, this can restore momentum without denying reality. Clear is especially useful for building rapport with someone new to coaching or hesitant to open up. It moves through contract, listening, exploring, action, and review. The sequence matters. It places listening early and explicitly, which helps establish trust before pushing toward action. In managerial life, where time pressure can make conversations feel transactional, that early listening is often what changes the relationship. Fuel is designed for behavior and performance improvement contexts. It is commonly summarized as frame the conversation, understand the current state, explore the desired goal, and lay out the plan. Fuel fits well inside a manager's responsibilities because it keeps accountability visible without turning the conversation into prosecution. It acknowledges that performance conversations need structure and consequences, and that they also need ownership from the person being coached. These models are not competing religions, they are scaffolds. A manager as coach chooses a scaffold based on context, not preference. Over time, the goal is not to perform a model. The goal is to build an internal sense of sequence, knowing when the conversation needs clarity, when it needs reality, when it needs options, and when it needs commitment. Feedback is the daily currency of coaching, and it benefits from its own structure. The Situation Behavior Impact Model, often shortened to SBI, is one of the most widely used approaches for delivering feedback. It reduces defensiveness by making feedback specific and observable. The manager names the situation, describes the behavior without interpreting motive, and then states the impact. Research summaries from leadership development organizations, including the Center for Creative Leadership, often associate structured feedback with lower anxiety around feedback and higher perceived manager effectiveness when feedback happens more frequently. Can be extended to SBII by adding inquiry into intent. This turns feedback into dialogue rather than verdict. The manager still describes situation, behavior, and impact, then asks what the aim was in that moment or what outcome was hoped for. Sometimes intent is positive and execution is poor. Sometimes inquiry reveals a misunderstanding that can be corrected. Either way, inquiry makes feedback a collaborative process while keeping accountability clear. Some coaching research also suggests a practical pattern in how people respond. Backward-looking criticism can trigger defensiveness, while future-focused questions tend to support learning and problem-solving. The takeaway is simple. When a conversation centers on what went wrong, the mind often protects identity. When it centers on what can be done next, the mind searches for strategy. Future-focused coaching does not mean consequences disappear. It means guidance becomes directionally intelligent. Instead of circling the past, coaching asks what a better next attempt will look like. Instead of exhausting someone with judgment, it specifies the behavior that will change. That is how feedback becomes development rather than damage. The highest leverage place to practice these habits is the one-on-one meeting. In many organizations, the one-on-one is treated as a status update. That is a missed opportunity. A one-on-one can function as the operating system for coaching, the recurring structure where goals are clarified, reality is surfaced, options are explored, and commitments are made. Best practice guidance in the coaching literature commonly recommends one-on-ones that run 30 to 60 minutes at a consistent cadence. In hybrid environments, where informal contact is less reliable, the one-on-one becomes a primary channel for alignment and growth. A simple structure can keep these meetings from collapsing into task lists by ensuring attention to the person, the work, and the future. The person includes well-being, motivation, and personal friction that affects performance. The work covers progress, obstacles, and feedback. The future addresses growth, capability building, and longer-term direction. This is not sentimental. It is strategic. Teams underperform when personal strain is ignored, when work obstacles are hidden, and when future growth is postponed. Within that structure, an ask-then-add pattern preserves ownership. The employee offers a plan first, then the manager adds constraints, context, resources, or decisions. This sequencing trains thinking. If the manager adds first, the employee learns to wait. If the employee goes first, the employee learns to lead their own work. Hybrid and remote contexts also sharpen the need for explicitness. When alignment is mostly informal, a team can drift for weeks before anyone notices. Written agreements reduce that drift. They can be as simple as a shared note capturing the goal, the next step, and the definition of done. Written clarity also protects relationships. When expectations are ambiguous, people can interpret disappointment as disrespect. When expectations are explicit, disappointment becomes a mismatch that can be fixed. Coaching changes the timing of feedback as well. Annual feedback dumps create dread and distortion. Timely, specific, behavior-based interventions are usually more humane and more effective. They also reduce the drama of formal reviews because the review becomes a summary of known patterns rather than a surprise. A second practice exercise strengthens that habit. For a current team challenge, a manager can pre-write three questions that follow a reliable sequence. The first targets clarity, such as, what outcome would count as success by the end of next week? The second targets options, such as, what are three ways forward, including one that changes the scope? The third targets commitment, such as, what is the next step, and when will progress be reviewed? The point is not perfect wording. The point is sequence that reliably produces movement. When coaching becomes normal in one-on-ones, it can be integrated into formal performance management without turning into bureaucracy. Many organizations in 2024 and 2025 continue shifting away from annual review practices toward more continuous feedback. The emotional reality behind that shift is straightforward. When stakes concentrate into one yearly conversation, anxiety rises. When performance conversations happen quarterly or monthly, the stakes distribute across time and become easier to use. Some critiques of annual reviews are historical as well as psychological. The annual review model has roots in early 20th century administrative systems and becomes standardized across corporate life in the decades that follow. It is designed for control and classification more than development. In modern knowledge work, where projects change quickly and skills decay faster, a yearly cadence cannot carry the weight organizations place on it. Case studies of organizations that move to continuous feedback often describe the difference in plain terms. When reviews happen once a year, they can feel like judgment day. When check-ins happen regularly, they can feel like steering. In published accounts of Progress Software's transition to continuous feedback, more frequent conversations are associated with a lower sense of threat and a higher sense of guidance. That distinction matters because perceived threat narrows learning and coaching depends on learning. Continuous feedback does not remove the need for evaluation. Decisions about compensation and promotion still occur. Coaching changes the operating posture. Development becomes continuous, and evaluation becomes an aggregation of evidence rather than a single annual moment. In review conversations, coaching models become practical. SBI examples provide evidence without personal attack. Future-focused questions create a bridge from evaluation to growth. A manager can name what is observed, clarify impact, inquire about intent when it matters, and then ask what change will look like in the next cycle. The review becomes less about defending identity and more about building capability. A development plan makes that capability concrete. Strong plans link performance goals to capability goals and then to manager support. A performance goal is an outcome, such as delivering a project on time, reducing rework, improving customer satisfaction, or meeting a quality standard. A capability goal is the skill or habit that makes the outcome sustainable, such as clearer stakeholder mapping, better prioritization, stronger conflict management, more effective written communication, or wiser delegation. Manager support is the enabling condition, including time to practice, feedback frequency, access to training, and removal of blockers. This is where the manager as coach identity becomes distinctive. A supervisor of tasks tends to focus on what the employee will do. An architect of capability also states what the manager will do, how often feedback will be given, how progress will be measured, and what support will be offered. Mutual clarity like that is one reason coaching is often linked to retention. People are more likely to stay where growth is visible and supported. Measurement often determines whether coaching becomes culture or remains a slogan. Organizations increasingly seek return on investment, often shortened to ROI, not because leaders are heartless, but because resources are finite. Survey research from large professional services firms and industry groups frequently reports positive ROI from executive coaching programs, sometimes expressed as multiples of the initial investment, though methods and confidence vary by study design. Costs and benefits need careful definition. Coaching costs typically include fees and program expenses, time leaders spend in coaching, and governance overhead. Benefits are often captured through retention improvements, productivity gains, faster product launches, and stronger client relationships. Some organizations quantify effects like time to market and engagement to illustrate ROI, while others rely on a mix of quantitative and qualitative indicators. Even when ROI is not captured in dollars, leading indicators can show whether coaching is taking hold. Adoption can be reflected in the frequency of one-on-ones, the number of feedback moments, and the presence of written goals. Quality can be reflected in whether conversations stay grounded in reality and options rather than mere updates, whether feedback remains behavior-based, and whether commitments are reviewed. Lagging outcomes such as retention, engagement, cycle time, and quality often move later, but they tend to align with leading indicators when coaching is becoming embedded. Industry survey research also adds a consistent message. Organizations that describe stronger coaching cultures also report higher engagement and improvements in work quality, productivity, and retention. The implication is practical. Coaching is not merely a leadership style. It becomes a way of organizing work and developing people. A 90-day rhythm often fits managerial reality, using weekly one-on-ones, monthly goal checks, and quarterly career conversations as the spine of ongoing development, with the annual review serving as a consolidated evidence summary rather than a final judgment. Tools matter, but only when they stay lightweight. A manager as coach dashboard is best understood as a simple tracking view of wins, blockers, current goals, and next commitments for each direct report. It supports memory, not surveillance. In hybrid work, context slips across systems. A dashboard helps keep coaching anchored in what is agreed, what progresses, what stalls, and what support is needed. A one-page coaching checklist serves a similar purpose. The aim is not to control the manager, but to protect fairness and consistency. It can prompt a quick self-check. Feedback ties to observable behavior. At least one concrete example exists. The next step is clear and time-bound, and the conversation moves toward the future after evidence is named. When prompts like these are followed, reviews become more defensible and more developmental at the same time. A 30, 60, and 90-day coaching plan template can turn review outcomes into sequenced action. The first 30 days prioritize stabilization and clarity, including defined goals, a one-on-one rhythm, and named blockers. 60 days emphasize practice and feedback with repeated behavior change loops and captured evidence. 90 days consolidate progress, define the new standard, and set the next growth target. The template stays useful only if it remains brief. Over-engineered documentation invites friction and makes coaching feel ceremonial. A simple feedback log is another lightweight tool with outsized impact. It records behavior-based moments with date, context, and the agreed next step. The log helps guard against recency bias in reviews, discourages overgeneralization, and creates a clearer view of patterns. When the log is empty, development is often being postponed. All of these elements converge on a single practical idea. In 2025, a manager's job is not only to supervise tasks, but to build a team that can learn faster than the environment changes. From this foundation, the focus shifts to the mechanics of coaching conversations that hold up under pressure, using core frameworks to handle defensiveness without sacrificing standards. This concludes the audiobook narration. Thank you for listening.